It's just past 7:08 in the morning. You're listening to Upfront. My name is Brian Edwards-Tiekert. A very happy new year and an enormous thanks to all of you who made year-end gifts to KPFA. It was amazing to see them all roll in right until midnight on New Year's Eve. Speaking of the new year, a new Democratic-led Congress is going to be sworn in tomorrow in what will be day 14 of a government shutdown and has no end in sight. Roughly 800,000 federal employees impacted so far. About 380,000 of them furloughed, sent home, but 420,000 forced to work without pay. That is the subject of a new lawsuit by the American Federation of Government Employees, who alleges it is a violation of the Fair Labor Standards Act. The bigger question is, when you have some 800,000 people in the economy who have just seen a major hit to their bank account and major uncertainty over when the next point is that more money will be entering that bank account, what implications does it have for the larger economy as a whole? And joining us to unpack that is someone who actually studied the effects of the last government shutdown of a comparable length. Scott Baker is a professor of finance at Northwestern's Kellogg School of Management, co-author of a study on the economic impacts of the 2013 government shutdown, which lasted a grand total of 16 days. Joins us now on the phone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So why don't you first start by kind of outlining the mechanism? How do we expect a government shutdown to impact the larger economy?
Yeah, so there's a couple main kind of avenues to affect the broader economy. The first is really kind of directly through a reduction in spending and economic activity, restaurant visits, bills being paid, all kinds of things like that, by the folks who are directly affected. So the federal workers, federal contractors who are kind of working without pay currently or furloughed and sent home without pay for the time being, they're going to be cutting back on a lot of different types of spending. And that's something that we kind of went through in this paper and documented fairly thoroughly. So this is mostly going to have impacts on kind of the local economic activity. So if you're in somewhere like D.C. or in other cities that have a lot of federal workers or federal contractors, you're probably going to be seeing, and you're a local business owner, you're probably going to be seeing a lot less business. And then the second way is that we couldn't test quite as directly. I talk about this in some other work I have about political uncertainty, is kind of in this, as you mentioned, this uncertainty channel, which is, to the extent that households have less confidence in government, more uncertainty about what's going to be going on, both with their own jobs, but also with the broader economy as a whole and the government stewardship of it, they tend to kind of cut back on spending, try to increase savings for, something that might happen in the future.
All right. Well, let's start with the things you can study in detail. What were the impacts on the economic behavior of the federal employees who were hit in 2013?
Right. So the 2013 shutdown lasted about 2 weeks. So we're kind of coming up on that again. And what really happened there, the direct impact, was about a 50% reduction in their paychecks because of the staggered nature of these paychecks. Federal workers kind of saw a 50% decline in the relevant paycheck, and then that was kind of made up later on. And what we saw for these workers is there was a very immediate reduction in spending. So for every kind of dollar less of paycheck that they received or of income that they received, they spent about 30% less. And this was even larger for those who were furloughed. So those folks who had to stay home, they cut back spending by, almost 40 or 50% for every dollar of income they lost. And so this was a pretty sizable shift in spending. Now, the kind of the good news is that, Congress has already authorized for this shutdown, as they did in 2013, the back pay. So for those who are working and for those who are furloughed, they will get repaid their money. And in the 2013 study, we showed that there was actually a kind of a nice boost again after they got repaid their wages. And so some of this kind of economic damage is going to be made up for. That's not true for all workers. So for a lot of the federal contractors who aren't direct federal employees, they are, you know, they might be furloughed and they're not going to be repaid by the government and likely not by their employers either.
Well, how big is that universe, the people who are dependent on federal government spending but not direct federal government employees?
So that's a little bit harder to estimate. It kind of depends on the kind of contractors and the employers deciding, you know, what's going to happen with their workers. They don't necessarily need to furlough them, but if the government stops paying the company might ask their, you know, kind of lay off or furlough some of their workers. So there's various estimates, but often, you know, it's in the range of several hundred thousand people who may be affected kind of outside the direct employ of the government. And this is a number that's kind of been increasing over the past 10 to 20 years as we've seen more and more kind of role of contractors and contracted workers in federal and state governments.
So you described a scenario where there was a significant impact, but not an enduring impact after a shutdown of about 2 weeks. But that's a shutdown that straddles two pay periods. So nobody went without a paycheck. They just got smaller paychecks. Like, do we have any basis for making educated guesses about what things look like if this goes on a month, 6 weeks, if there are people who can't make their mortgage or their tuition bill?
Absolutely. So over the period of a couple weeks, I mean, I think you're right that, you know, the damage was likely fairly limited. It actually showed kind of some of the capacity for these households to shift around quite rapidly some of their spending and maybe, you know, do their own gardening or take care of their kids or, you know, cook food at home instead of going out to eat. And this is maybe not, you know, the worst thing in the world. We did see some evidence that, you know, points to maybe bigger problems kind of if the shutdown extends to, you know, 3 weeks or a month or longer. You know, some of the kind of adjustment was made in like delaying some of the paying of bills or, you know, maybe putting a bit more things on credit cards. And, you know, if you're just using a credit card for a couple weeks, you know, there's not really an interest payment. There's not really a big economic cost there if you can just pay it back when you are kind of given your back pay. But to the extent that is going to be, you know, not just delaying a payment or putting something on a credit card that otherwise would have been paid in cash and then repaying it later, but you start missing payments, you know, that's likely going to cause both more economic hardship for those folks who maybe don't have those margins of adjustment, but is also going to maybe cause some more lasting damage.
And I guess there's a bigger question, which is federal government work has historically been seen as the most reliable, dependable sector of the economy to be employed in. It's something you can work in for your entire career, pretty much count on not getting laid off from, and then retire with some amount of security. This is the second shutdown of the government in less than a year. The Trump administration's just announced there's not going to be a cost of living increase for federal employees in the year to come. Are there any indications that there is a, you know, larger retraction by federal employees just based on having less confidence about their line of work?
Yeah, I wouldn't be too surprised if this, you know, could be the case. We tried to test for this in 2013 by looking at folks who were kind of older federal workers versus younger federal workers, with the idea that, you know, the older workers are kind of closer to retirement and they're not going to be as impacted by any, you know, future, you know, shutdowns kind of coming, you know, years down the line or issues with instability of government work. And we didn't really find any significant differences there, but it might have just been a bit too subtle or a bit too slow moving. I agree that, you know, to the extent that there are continual, you know, multi-week shutdowns, you know, this can certainly cause some uncertainty about, you know, the stability, the attractiveness of you know, federal employment. The 2 week shutdown was already much longer than a lot of the other shutdowns. It is one of the longest on records. You know, very short shutdowns are not too atypical. You know, a day or two, those have occurred pretty commonly over the past 20, 30 years. But really, these multi-week shutdowns are, you know, fairly atypical. And if they're becoming much more common, that's certainly something that these workers are going to have to start to plan for a bit more, maybe.
Well, I mean, we're entering a period of divided government and a president who clearly thrives on brinksmanship. We're speaking to Scott Breaker. He is professor of finance at Northwestern's Kellogg School of Management. He co-authored a study on the economic impacts of the last government shutdown of a comparable length to the one that we are in the midst of. This is the 2013 government shutdown under President Obama, spearheaded by Republican Senator Ted Cruz of Texas. That one lasted 16 days. Our current government shutdown is in its 13th day with no resolution in sight. Scott Breaker, let's talk for a minute about kind of what the unknowns are. First of all, we've just been speaking about the employment side, employee side effects of our government shutdown. But what about the economic impacts of services the government is not providing? Is there anything it's choking back on that's significant but maybe not measurable?
Yeah, so I think one of the harder things to measure is kind of delays in permitting processes. So, you know, most of the essential functions of government kind of still kind of continue to function. So, you know, things that are essential for health and safety are typically still going. Things that are funded by sources other than congressional appropriations, so something like the post office or the Federal Reserve System or even, you know, most state like fish and game and wildlife organizations, you know, these are funded by like user fees or postage or, you know, bank fees. And so they're kind of continuing to operate. One thing that often is shut down that's most notable are things like national parks, and those are certainly too bad for tourists or folks who want to, you know, go out and have a nice camping vacation. But something that's harder to measure that does have economic impact is a lot of like small business administration type agencies or doing inspections of various sorts of plants or meat packing plants, things like that, can cause a lot of delays in businesses starting, in loans getting approved, in plants being able to operate. And I think that, you know, we don't have a great idea of, you know, the economic impact of these, but, you know, some of these can cause kind of economic activity to be foregone or to halt for the period of the shutdown, or at least, you know, they can be delayed a bit, but, you know, once the shutdown starts getting a bit longer, these really start to bite.
What about for academics like you? The federal government's one of the greatest producers of publicly available data about the society and the economy. Do we wind up with data holes after a shutdown?
Yeah, so occasionally we do. During the last one, there were actually, you know, a number of agencies that generally provide lots of important economic data for both for businesses and also for researchers like myself that kind of shut down their websites even, you know, something that we wouldn't think, you know, you would really need to do, they were maybe kind of obligated to do. And there's actually the biggest conference, the biggest economics conference of the year is occurring this weekend in Atlanta. And this also has a lot of the hiring activity for new PhDs going into everything from industry to academia to government work like at the Fed or the Census or the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And we've just have been learning that, you know, a lot of the people who would researchers and government workers who would come out and do some of that hiring and do some presenting, you know, won't be able to get reimbursed for this. And so, you know, likely a lot of those hiring decisions are going to be, you know, foregone or delayed as well. So certainly there's an impact in kind of the research side and the economics kind of community as well.
Scott Breaker is our guest. He's a professor of finance at Northwestern's Kellogg School of Management. He co-authored a study on the economic impacts of the last major government shutdown. That was in 2013, lasted 16 days, 3 days longer than the current mark we're at on the shutdown that started just before Christmas. And I wanted to talk particularly as we close out about the timing. Obviously, the run-up to Christmas is make or break for retailers in this country. Is it possible having a shutdown happen right during peak shopping season magnifies the impacts of the shutdown?
So I actually haven't seen any kind of regional kind of retail indicators that said, you know, DC had kind of a particularly worse time. I've talked with some folks and, you know, we had kind of been thinking that this actually might have been a bit fortunate because, you know, so many workers were likely already out on vacation or have put in their vacation time early, and so we're planning to maybe not be at work, and federal work is maybe at a bit of a lull during, you know, this couple week period. So I think retail sales in general across the nation looked pretty strong, and so hopefully weren't too affected by this. But I think, you know, maybe once those holiday bills start coming due and the government is still shut down, maybe that's when households are going to start to worry and panic a bit more.
All right. Scott Baker, what are the biggest research holes on government shutdowns? What's your next project?
So we were actually talking, my co-author Constantine Yanelis and I were talking about kind of doing an update with some new sources of data we have based on this current shutdown to see, you know, maybe if the differential timing, differential leadership, differential length might have had any other effects. And then I also have some work with Nick Bloom and Stephen Davis, who are at Stanford and University of Chicago, respectively, kind of more broadly about political uncertainty and some of the macro effects that this sort of uncertainty caused by government behavior or government policy has on business investment and household consumption. So that's kind of some ongoing work that we've been pursuing.
All right. Scott Baker, really appreciate you taking the time to speak to us this morning.
My pleasure.
Scott Baker is a professor of finance at Northwestern's Kellogg School of Management. He's co-author of a study on the economic impacts of the last major government shutdown of comparable length to the one we're enduring right now. This was in 2013 under the Obama administration, spearheaded by Ted Cruz, Republican senator of Texas. That one lasted 16 days. When the new Democrat-led Congress is sworn in tomorrow, the current shutdown will be in its 14th day with no resolution in sight. The Washington Press Corps is reporting that the plan coming out of the Democratic leadership in Congress is to immediately pass bills that would fully fund every part of government except the Department of Homeland Security, using the exact same language that was approved by the Republican-led Senate without objection in December of last year. And get that right to Trump's desk, and then to pass a continuing resolution providing temporary funding at current levels for the Department of Homeland Security, leaving the question of funding a wall on the border or some form of border security above and beyond normal spending still in play. No indication from the Trump administration or the Republican leadership in the Senate that they would bite on any of those bills. So we will continue to follow that and continue to keep you updated. Tomorrow morning, we're going to be speaking to John Nichols about what the playbook looks like for a newly adversarial Congress, a Democrat-led House of Representatives that'll be installed in 2019. Not just the resolution to the shutdown, but what the value is of championing bills that don't have a prayer of getting through the Senate. What picking battles using the oversight power of the House of Representatives might look like, what to expect from the year to come, and what to expect from a Democratic caucus that has seen a bumper crop of freshmen with progressive politics that would have been considered outside of the party's mainstream or outside of what it was possible to get elected on just a few short years ago. So look forward to that conversation. Also, we will be joined for the first time in the new year by Kat Brooks coming back to the co-host seat. In fact, she'll be in our editorial meeting in just about 2 hours to plan tomorrow's show. So I'm looking forward to that. Want to get you up to speed in a few things KPFA has going on in the new year. Bob Baldock and Ken Preston, our events producers, have put together their own bumper crop of KPFA events. Our first will be January 23rd. That's a Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. Han Jin presenting the new book, The Banished Immortal, A Life of Li Bai. That'll be at the Hillside Club, hosted by Jack Foley. January 31st, that is a Thursday, the great climate reporter Dar Jamail is presenting his new book, The End of Ice, Bearing Witness and Finding a Meaning in the Path of Climate Disruption. That'll be at the First Congregational Church of Berkeley, hosted by Antonia Juhas. And then February 6th, that is a Wednesday, Robert Reich is presenting his book, The Common Good. That will be at the First Congregational Church of Berkeley as well. Going on down our event, Vandana Shiva is doing a presentation on February 11th called Women, Rituals, and Ecology in India. And February 25th, the publisher of The Nation magazine, Katrina Vandenhevel, is coming to town with her husband, Stephen Cohen, who is a Russia expert, presenting his new book, War with Russia. That's going to be hosted by my friend and colleague Mitch Cesarich. Here's the deal. All of our events start at 7:30 p.m. They are all at venues that are wheelchair accessible. Tickets are always available at brownpapertickets.com or through local independent bookstores over the counter. You can get tickets at the door, but they cost a little bit more, and sometimes we run out. And a lot of the names we have coming up in the next couple months are big names. If you want to see a full listing of our events, go to kpfa.org and just click the little hamburger drop-down menu in the upper left-hand corner. Go check out events. Again, that's www.kpfa.org/events. The program is Up Front. My name is Brian Edwards Teeker. Coming up in the second half of this hour on the program, we're going to take a look at some of the new policies that are taking effect in California in the year to come. In the 2018 legislative session, it was kind of a breakthrough in terms of policies that broke through the juggernaut of the police lobby in Sacramento. Some very significant police transparency measures that are taking effect that are going to bring a lot more light to bear on cases that have got people out in the streets and reporters frantically trying to work sources because they can't get documents through official channels. We'll be joined in studio by one of the most tenacious police reporters in our region, Darwin Von Graham, who won the Polk Award for his reporting on the Oakland Police Department sex crime scandal that saw three police chiefs ousted in less than 2 weeks. We'll talk about what the new laws mean for the stories that he's tracking. That is coming up at 7:30 when we return after the news.